It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to
Mile High Hockey Lab.
Mile High Hockey Lab.
Hello and welcome to the Mile High Hockey Lab. My name is Adrian Hernandez, and if you've heard that intro, it's because I practice it a lot, even though it's only like seven words. I'm here today with Ezra, Evan, and Jackie to talk Colorado Avalanche hockey. We'll just get right into things. Just while I have your attention, please subscribe, share, turn on your alerts on YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, whatever it is you're watching this live broadcast on. And know that all of our live broadcasts are available in their recorded form the day after the show on Spotify, iTunes, and Audible, and all of the other ones you can probably think of, except for, I'm pretty sure, the one Ezra uses. So,
that's right.
Yeah. So if you enjoy what you listen to today, please head on over there, share with your fellow Avalanche fans and friends. And yeah, let's just get to talking about what there is to talk about, because it's been quite some time between the four of us since we've had a chat. And fortunately for us, some things have happened Avs related. But I just wanted to start with a little bit of a celebration of a year ago today. The Colorado Avalanche won the Stanley Cup in Game 6 against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Just after Nazem Kadri scored a goal that no one thought went in a couple nights before. And there it is, Ezra. Ezra's got the background, Bowen Byram holding it up. Beautiful.
I've been staying away from this background since they were chasing
it. Yeah. I noticed you had an Avalanche / Kraken one, so we might have to keep it on the cup one today just so that I don't get mad at you in my peripherals. But nonetheless, like I said, I'm here with Ezra, Evan, and Jackie. And I'll start with you, Evan. Based on last year, what was your favorite moment of the cup run last season?
Oh man, I mean, it has to be the game that they won, right? It has to be. And I mean, personally for me, I was invited last minute to go actually to the arena to go, watch the game, nice. And the watch party. And I still have the ticket saved on my phone as like a memory thing. That's like cool. Best $20 I've ever spent in my life. So it's a great celebratory thing. I was very excited to tweet that this morning because I knew it was like, oh my god, tomorrow's 1 year. I'm gonna tweet that out first thing I wake up, and voila.
So,
yeah. I was very much looking forward to that.
The algorithm was all over it.
Woke up.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I had to work my other job at 7 a.m. this morning, so I was up early. So
good for you. It sounds like graduation to me. You sure you don't want to go back? Yeah. Well, I agree. I think Game 6 was definitely the moment because they won it, and it was, however, 20 some years since the Avs had done so. But for me, it was the Kadri saga in St. Louis. I just thought that was the story of the playoffs. Something that honestly, I don't feel like the recap video that ESPN put out for the Stanley Cup champions and recap even touched on for even a second, which I'm sure was a business decision. But nonetheless, Jackie, what was your favorite moment from the Avalanche Cup run last season?
I will say both y'all's choices are really excellent. I knew that the anniversary was today, but I didn't really correlate it with us talking, so I think this is a very good choice of day to talk. But
perfect, yeah.
I have to pick the Game 7 win against St. Louis, and there's also one good reason for that. It was also my birthday. So we were in Aspen, and I wasn't sure how much we'd be able to watch, and we came back from dinner with right at the end of the first period, so I was able to watch the second and third, and then obviously the big moment. So I think that as far as like a moment where I just felt like the most, I mean, the win, of course, is exhilarating, but like a moment during a game that I'll never forget is probably that moment.
That Helm goal, basically,
yeah.
Right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that was one of those, like, didn't feel real moments, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Probably the first one of the cup run, definitely, was like, no way. Did that seriously just – because we were used to it happening the other way. Like, Kadri gives up a turnover on the faceoff, just after the Avs go up against Dallas, and Kivi Ranta scores twice, his first two goals of his life to beat the Avs, you know. And so to see the Avs kind of on the other side of that coin, where it's like no way that that happens with 4 point whatever seconds left in the game to send the Avs on to the Western Conference Final. That's another great moment. And Ezra, we'll end with you. What was your moment?
Oh, for me, it's got to be when Nicolas Abe-Kubel dropped the cup. Yeah. It's literally my computer background is this picture. Yeah.
Everybody's like, oh.
Screaming at him like, what the heck happened? It's I love it so much. It's so funny. And, you know, you only get that kind of fun moment if you've already won the cup. So
exactly, yeah.
It's a beautiful picture. I love it so much.
You give any legitimacy to the fact that some people – consider that a curse now that since Abe-Kubel dropped it.
I don't consider it.
Abe-Kubel plays for someone else, so maybe it's a curse for them and not us, hopefully. But
yeah, that explains what happened to Toronto.
Exactly. They're all like
yeah, exactly. The faces they're all making.
The faces in the picture are so good. I'll show it one more time.
Yeah, Kadri's got his hands on his head, like, oh god.
Yeah, Kadri's like, Kadri's the only one who I'm like, oh, he is mad at Abe-Kubel. The rest of them are just like, what's happening? And Kadri's like, I'm gonna beat this guy.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, we saw the Golden Knights win the Stanley Cup as well. And I'll just keep it pretty brief because you know I'm not a big fan of those guys. Although I respect the achievement and I kudos to them and their organization for getting to the precipice of this game of hockey. But is there anything that that Vegas Knight brought to the table that the Avalanche might need to emulate? Or is it kind of the Vegas Knights emulated the version of the Avs we saw win the cup and the Avs kind of know that road to victory? I'll start with you, Evan. What do you think?
That's a good question because when you think of Vegas, like their style, their play is just go, 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 right? Mm-hmm. That's why I would have loved a Vegas-Seattle series where it was just like both teams just go and like drain each other out, right? But ultimately that didn't happen, and Vegas was able to take advantage of that, right? I mean, they put up nine goals in that game five. Goals.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. So, you know, I think – it's just a matter of perseverance for them because, you know, they made it, you know, 5 out of 6 years to the postseason in the first place. They were doing something right, of course, to get mm-hmm. there. So it was just a matter of getting over the hump, which, you know, they did. And it was a good combination of staying healthy, playing the LTIR game with Stone, and, you know, really, really good goaltending too from Aiden Hill. So, you know, it's just perfect storm.
That was kind of the thing that I didn't expect was for the Vegas Knights goalies to do so well, especially Aiden Hill, obviously. And then I also, you know, I think Jonathan Marchessault is a great player. I didn't see the Conn Smythe version of Jonathan Marchessault coming, to be honest with you. And I'm kind of scared now because he was already an Avs killer. Now he's got that chip, you know, kind of notch in his belt. And I wonder if the Avs and Vegas rivalry could be heating up even more substantially. And I think that's what the Avalanche want this year if Vegas is just as good as they are this past season. Jackie, what about for you? Do you see anything in the way Vegas played or anything like that that the Avalanche might take from?
I think everyone has their own blueprint, but I definitely think there's several reminders the Avs can take from it. I think the Avs proved that, like, the era is here where you need mobile defense that can move the puck.
Yep.
Like, it's just so outdated to think of, like, one puck mover as your small offensive guy. It's like your whole defense basically needs to be able to move the puck. And so I think, like, everyone talks about Vegas's big defense. I mean, yeah, they're a bigger team. I think they play a little bit more defensive style than the Avs. But what they emulated from the Avs is to have that transition game to play with pace and to have defensemen that can move the puck.
Right.
But one thing I want the Avs to take from them is the Golden Knights had a very balanced lineup. And we've talked about depth a lot and we'll continue to talk about depth. And I think that's something they need to get back to. And you look at their time on ice, like they were so balanced. They only had one defenseman that played over 20 minutes. Two at 20, the rest were underneath that, but nobody was under 10 minutes. Not a single player on their team was under 10 minutes.
Wow.
So they had guys like Eichel played 15 minutes. You know, they were having their top line guys playing 15 minutes. And you contrast that with what the Avs were trying to get away with, playing McKinnon and Rantanen in 25 minutes. And I know that's a little bit of Bednar's style, but he's got to look at how that team was built and the distribution of ice time and take a couple clues from that, because they're just not going to win with the way that they were running their team last year. So I hope that they look at that.
Well, and I'll say this to your point. I think if that's Bednar's style, it's his style typically when the Avs are trailing, that the Avs have put their big guns on the ice more, because that's who he trusts to make a play.
I mean, to an extent. I mean, yeah, I see what you're saying. Like, if you're down, you're definitely going to ride the horses. But he did that the whole year.
Yeah.
And he did that from day one. I remember us doing a podcast thing. It was after game four. And I'm like, this is not sustainable. And I mean, yeah, it did get them to the end of the regular season, but that's why they didn't make it very far at all.
Agreed. Yeah.
So absolutely. That's something that I hope that they're really seriously looking at. You need to have like a decent third line, and you need to have fourth liners you can play.
Yeah.
Like, I don't expect McKinnon at 15 minutes. That's no, a little yeah, much.
No, no. But, I don't want McKinnon at 15 minutes.
But we can't have these guys playing 5 minutes. That's just not going to happen. You have to build a team that's better balanced than what
I think
had.
At one point when we were down a few defenders, McCarr might have even had like a 30-minute game.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous. You can't do that. And like he was even making comments. Like he was even saying that he can't it's not sustainable for him to play that much. Like, you have to listen to him. Like, he's being honest about it. So,
and he's got those young man legs. So if anybody's you should trust, it's Cale Makar. Ezra, then, what about you? Is there? Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Evan.
I was gonna say on the other end of that, right? Was it game seven that they had to play Brad Hunt and forward, and he played like one shift?
Yeah, right? 41 like, seconds.
It was ridiculous. Like, I don't know. It's like Jake said, it was just unsustainable. So for sure, ridiculous.
Yeah, well, lesson learned, I think, there. Ezra, Jackie mentions depth and spreading the ice time. How important is that to you, and is that your takeaway from Vegas as well?
I fully agree with that, and I think it speaks to – I think Jackie said that Vegas learned some things from the Avs, and I think it speaks to – this conversation speaks to that, because when the Avs won the Cup, they were much the ice time distribution was much better, and the fourth line – was a contributing factor that was getting 11 minutes a night, you know? So I think ultimately Colorado knows what needs to do, and it needs to find a way to construct a roster that can get back to that. Obviously, injuries played a major part last season in everything going down the way that it did. But the thing that I think we can take away most is Colorado built a team from the defense out, and they can't really be trading away defensemen if they're going to maintain that. So for me, I think a lesson that can be learned here is let's keep Taves in the fold if we can, you know?
Yeah. Well, and you know me, I'm the guy on the door of pounding on the door saying we should trade Taves, but that's honestly before some of the things that have happened over the last week. That's how I felt.
Yeah. I was right there with you, but
yeah,
I didn't think there was another way to get a 2C.
Exactly. But here we are possibly. So let's move on a little bit. And if you haven't already checked out the website, head on over to milehighhockey.com. We have a bunch of articles by the four of us and more. And we just talk Avs hockey, anything that might come to the surface. We usually chat about it. And there's, comment sections for you folks to get involved as well. So come on down to the website and check it out. I actually think, Evan, you just released an article recently about what Eric Johnson's potential departure will mean for free agency window for the Avalanche. And we can start talking a little bit about that based on, as we're saying that the Avs seem to be building from the defense out, rightfully so, when you have Cale Makar on your team. First, let's start with Johnson, though. What might you think is the reason for his departure? Is it just a money thing? Do you think he's probably going to get more on the open market? And where might you see him landing, Evan?
I mean, if someone pays him $6 million at his age for even a year, I feel like that's a little ridiculous.
There's no way. I'm going to say that right now. There is no possible way.
That would be ridiculous. But I think, it's just a matter of, like, obviously his contract's up. Nathan MacKinnon's new deal, being the highest paid, player in the league, kicks in this year. Obviously, a lot of that money's going to go to MacKinnon now. Mm-hmm. And so I think it was just a matter of, needing to move on, honestly. And as bad and as sad as it sounds, EJ had lost his step a little bit. We saw it a lot this season where, it was hard for him to follow pucks or was just losing battles, things like that. And was really, the sixth defenseman of the team, really. So you know, to kind of move on from him, you know, go on to greener pastures, who, wherever he goes, you know, who knows? I could see like a Chicago wanting him of like, it's a veteran leadership organization. We need a young group. We're going to need leaders. We're going to need veterans to help.
Well, they just traded for Taylor Hall and the rights to negotiate with Nick Foligno, which is completely out of left field, if you ask me. But here we are.
It really is. I know. So, you know, we'll see what happens with EJ, or, you know, he very well could just retire if nobody wants him. But I would think that somebody would want him. So
I would guess that based on his statement that he's not coming back to Colorado, he knows that there's other teams that have interest in him. It's just a matter. In fact, that probably means that the interest that he's not supposed to be getting because of tampering, that he probably is anyway, has told him that the money he's getting elsewhere is the reason why he's already made it clear he's probably not going to be a Colorado Avalanche anymore. But just continuing with that subject, to me, from the outside looking in, Colorado's top five defenders are pretty much in place right now, with that 6 to 8 D kind of not being settled. And in the past, we've seen the Avs just go to the open market and get veterans to fill those six through eight roles, and then have a couple of guys come up from the A to do the same. Ezra, Jackie, I'll send this one your way because you're the young peep person. So is there anyone in the defensive group, young person wise, that you see coming into that 6 and 7 D role, and who might that be? And if not, do you think the Avs will keep on the veteran shtick for 6 through 7 D?
I think they need to sign one person. I've said it publicly. I think Jack Johnson would be nice to come back. I think, he's fit in good. I think he's a good 6 D. I think if someone ever does come in and take his spot, he's fine being a 7th. I think they could still get him for under $1 million. To me, it's like a no brainer. I don't know what they're going to find better. And if they do, it's not going to be as cheap. Like, they're going to have several league minimum players on this team. So I think that's one area where they could do it and not feel a deficit. And just real quick on EJ, we have to remember he's never been a free agent. And so he really needs, like, someone like Jack Johnson has. Like, he knows what his market is. He knows what kind of offers he's going to get. Someone like EJ has never been a free agent, so I think he's definitely going to be somebody that wants to know what's out there. Or like you said, maybe he already knows what is. That's possible, too. I feel like someone's going to give him term. He might not get a lot of money, but I really do feel like someone out there might give him, like, 2 years, because he really wants to hit that 1,000 games. He could hit it. I think he's 80 away, so, like, he could. But if he got a 2-year term, I think that's maybe, like, exactly what he's looking for.
Okay.
But as far as anyone coming in, I mean, no. I mean, we know the Avs don't have any prospects. I'm sure they're going to give Malinsky a chance at some point, but I certainly would not pencil him into any sort of, like, you know, filling in a need for the Avs or anything like that. Like, if he is that guy and they can move into next summer and pencil him in, that's fantastic. But, like, you can't do that right now. So I think they need to sign at least one veteran. Then you have Hunt as the 7th, which I'm comfortable with them playing some, but you also have to remember there's probably going to be one defenseman that's always hurt. So then I'm not super comfortable with him as the always number 7, but, you know, there's only so much they can do. So defense is the least of their issues, I think. Like, this team still needs to sign 6 forwards. That's kind of horrifying.
It is. It is indeed. The good news is, though, they will likely have a nice little pocket full of cash to do so. And then a helping factor in that is you get a guy like Ryan Johansson at a 50% retained salary discount. So that kind of weaponizes your cash a little bit more. As Ezra shakes his head in disbelief, Ezra, what do you think that deal makes a possible re-signing with JT Compher more of a reality, or is that kind of he's going to be a Blackhawk or somewhere else for you? What do you think?
Ultimately, I think with JT, he can get more money elsewhere, and if that's what he wants to do, he should do that. And I think that's kind of the same thing with the Eric Johnson conversation, where he could have come back maybe if they had any interest in him. I didn't. I think his skating is gone, so he doesn't fit the system. But he can get more money elsewhere. Right. And I think the same is true for JT. Evan Rodriguez maybe can't. Maybe Evan Rodriguez is a guy who the Avs are able to re-sign now. But both of those, both him and JT, I feel like are just able to get more money elsewhere. And
yeah,
bottom line is if that's the choice they want to make, then that's the choice they should make. So I don't know. One thing I wanted to ask Jackie about, actually, going back to the defense question, is Ryan Merkley. I mean, he came in. He wasn't super effective in the AHL, but I guess this question is for everybody more than just Jackie. But what do you see with him? Do you think he comes back? Do you think he can make a difference?
Well, he has to get qualified first, and I don't think that's a given. We'll see on Friday. I mean, he doesn't have arbitration rights. Usually the Avs will qualify them that don't have arbitration rights because it's pretty much a take it or leave it. There's not much leverage the player has. So, but it was not a good sign that he didn't dress for a single playoff game.
Gotcha.
And, you know, that just, to me, sounds like a lack of interest in investing in him from the organization. And so if they've already made that decision, then it's just best to just cut ties and move on because they can only focus on so many players. Like I thought with Barron's not signing, okay, well then they at least had a year that they could entertain the thought of doing something with Merkley. But now that they have Malinsky, he's going to be like their little project for the year. So, so Merkley could come back. I just like they've already moved on. I think I don't see there's any interest there.
Let's see, his base salary is $832,000. So I mean, it's not going to be an expensive qualifying offer, but maybe it is when you're trying to qualify Alex Newhook and sign Alex Newhook. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's all buried money, so it's like whatever. So, but they already re-signed. Like they have Klerman and they have Wyatt Ahmet, who's their other free agent. Fine, and then they signed Middleton, and they're always going to. So there's still Brad Hunt, if he's ever there in the AHL or not. You have Malinsky. There's always going to be a couple guys on AHL deals. So, like, where is he going to play?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I saw him as a possible, like, top four in the AHL, you know, with a look at maybe moving up. But if he proves himself defensively, which – because, you know, his offensive game is his strength and his defensive game is what they were working on him. With and I thought maybe he didn't play in the playoffs because he just hadn't gotten there yet. They didn't have that trust yet, but not necessarily because he was, you know, on the outs. But him not getting signed right away is not a good sign.
He played a lot. Like I think the trade was late January, so he definitely played a lot February, March.
Yeah,
the first half of April, and then it's like once they had their new toy Malinsky, they were just like, oh, well, this guy's better. So why are we bothering?
He had 8 points in 28 games.
I mean, he was all right. Like, his offense is more like a Girard offense. He's good at passing, but he's not, like, dynamic in that way where he's, like, driving the net and kind of things like that. So, I don't know. I mean, there's talent there, but I just, like, you know, their desire only goes so far. I don't know. Like, they could qualify him. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really cost them much, but it's time, and they're going to sign a couple veterans as well, like kind of tweener veterans. I just don't think there's room for him. We'll see. Sense.
Yeah, and he's among some of the RFAs for the Avalanche to include, I think, who's the other guy that we got from Toronto? Malkin. He's also RFA. Well, I don't know. Couldn't think of that. But
it's been a while. It's been a while.
Jeez, okay. Malkin's an RFA. Obviously, Newhook is an RFA. Ezra, what does the price tag for you look like with the Newhook situation, and how do you see that playing out?
Yeah, I think it comes in just over $2 million for 2 years. That's okay. My expectation. I don't think they're not going to be comfortable giving him a long term deal, and he shouldn't be getting more than like 2.4 at maximum for a short-term deal because he's a 30-point guy as a second-year player, which is awesome, but he's also just a 30-point guy at this point with a lot to prove, especially on the defensive side. So I think, something around the $2 million mark, higher than $2 million, probably not below, but not too much higher. I think that's where we're going to land. And if it's one or I would expect 2 years, not one, but if it is one, then you could be even a little bit cheaper.
Yeah, and I tweeted earlier today and was totally wrong about what his qualifying offer had to be. I think I said it had to be $1.49 million because I was going off of his AAV, not his base salary. So in order for him to get his offer, it's like $874,000. So you can qualify him and then get to negotiating. That has to happen by Friday. Jackie, do you think New Hook represents a danger for offer sheet, or is no one interested?
I would say unlikely, but I've always said the kind of that middle class is the more ripe target for offer sheets rather than like the high end and say like a Byram or that those right. kind of players like Zegras and all these other the higher end of the RFAs. Everyone always talks about them getting offer sheeted, but that's not the target. It'd be the middle. Right. I actually thought about this in regards to he's a lot like Kotkaniemi. I don't know. Say the same.
Kotkaniemi. Yeah, you nailed it.
Who? I never say that name out loud. and we all know that he was offer sheeted and it was successful. Yeah. He was offer sheeted after his best season was like 30 points, and he had just finished a 20 point season.
Yep.
Remember, he got offer sheeted for $6 million. So.
Yeah, if that happens, he's gone.
Offer sheets have to be.
A lot.
A real overpayment. Yeah. Not even like a little, like massive. A holy cow overpayment.
Yeah. Like a holy cow, why did you do that?
Yeah.
I think one thing that makes it unlikely that we see something like that is just every team in the league is in a cap crunch pretty much. So nobody can just dole out $6 million on a guy they're taking a shot at like that.
Yeah.
That situation back then was the Carolina Hurricanes had space and they wanted to retaliate against Montreal for cheating Aho.
Aho, yeah.
So that was a unique one, I think. But
definitely. But the funny thing is that if anyone would do it, I would think Montreal, because Kent Hughes is like a New Hook is very, very close with the Hughes family. His son and he's lived at their house. Like he was his agent before he became Montreal's GM. So if anybody loves them some Alex New Hook, it's going to be Kent Hughes.
Wow.
Montreal Canadiens, your Nepo baby. Yeah.
They love but spending money.
Do I think it's going to happen? No. But it would be kind of funny if it was a Kotkaniemi type offer sheet.
So
that happened to New Hook.
Ezra, you say it's somewhere in the 2 years, a little over $2 million area. Evan, do you agree with that? Or do you think maybe he... the Avs try to talk him into a little less, or he tries to talk them into a little more? What's your thoughts?
I also kind of agree with that. I would say New Hook would probably want a little more, like maybe like 2.5 for 2 years, maybe 3. Maybe if he talks him into 3, of like give me like 3 more chances, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think it, like Jackie said, it's a huge work in progress. I don't think he'll get offer sheeted either. And you know, he is right in the middle of the pack. He's a 30 point guy, as we've already, you know, said multiple times. And you know, he's only my age still. He's only 22. You still have to remember that.
Young boys some time.
He wasn't expected to be a Nathan MacKinnon right out the gate. So, you know, I feel like 3 years max will be, you know, that would be the most I think the Avs will give him. 3 years max, probably 2.5. You know, he'll definitely lean on the fact that he is a Stanley Cup champion and be like, hey, I helped you guys win a cup. You know, give me a little something more.
Yeah, so, I remember that game where that dude JT Compher went off. I did too. But it's weird, right? But, you know, when I look at New Hook, I don't see it as a comparable to the Tyson Joe situation, but a lot of people online like to make that comparable. I see that Alex New Hook has shown a lot of a higher ceiling in even a shorter amount of time, I feel like, in the bigs. So I'm not too worried about New Hook. I'm with you, Evan. I think giving him a third year to maybe smooth out that AAV, I think if anything, it's going to be at a pretty reasonable number. So if you have to offload him in that third year, you might have some opportunities to do so. And I still think that he's got another level that we haven't seen yet, and that the way that the top six was structured last season did not help a guy like Alex New Hook, who was like, let's see if this guy's the 2C, but let's also have him do it without two of the best players in the top six. And that just didn't really work out for that guy. So I'm with you all. I think bringing Newhook back is a lot more likely because he's an RFA, obviously. And I think just he's going to come at a more reliable price point. So that's nice. But moving on, we saw the Avs make a trade, and when I first saw it, I had to check its legitimacy because I was like, somebody's trolling me.
Same here.
There's no way. And, you know, I was like about to retweet it, and then I'm thinking about, oh, man, if I retweet this, my credibility is going down the tank if it's not true, which I don't think I have any credibility to begin with. So, Ezra, on a scale of 1 to 10, how concerned are you about Ryan Johansson's injury status? And what did you think of the trade just off the top?
Yeah, I mean, I love the trade. I didn't really think it was a realistic option. I thought Ryan Johansson was an untradeable piece at $8 million, and there was no reason for Nashville to retain money. But then Barry Trotz said he wants to make some changes, and he made some changes. So he's willing to eat $8 million over 2 years. That's great. That's a huge boon for us. I think Ryan Johansson can be a player that makes a difference as a middle six center, ideally a second line center. And I think what it comes down to with the injury is initially I heard that it was an Achilles, and that made me really nervous.
That's,
but then Ryan Johansson himself said it was on the outside of his ankle, not the back of his ankle.
Oh, okay.
So that gave me a little more optimism because you know the Avalanche aren't going to make this trade without doing their homework on that injury. And if it's not an Achilles, that means it's not one of the tendons that tends to have tricky recovery periods for people who, you know, experience injuries to them that can kind of go one way or another. Mm-hmm. It's more straightforward. So I feel pretty good about the injury. I'm not overly worried about it. What I am worried about with Johansson is how dialed in he's going to be every night. That's been a problem for him throughout his career, and not the kind of thing that Bednar has put up with. So we'll see if he's able to lock himself in for, you know, with Nathan MacKinnon leading the way. I think
that's interesting. That's very interesting because if you remember correct, right or wrong, Nazem Kadri had a similar reputation leaving Toronto. In fact, I think we heard Marner or Babcock made Marner do a survey, and he listed Nazem Kadri as the laziest player on the team and then made it public to the team. But that's another story. But
oh yeah, and Mike Babcock is back in the league. But
yeah, and here we are. So yeah, like I see that scenario playing out, and I know that that's been an issue for him in the past, but I feel like if there is a system where there is a coach and a culture that can kind of basically, we'll find out pretty quick whether or not he's buying in and a part of the club or not, because I think that these guys will pretty much get rid of him if he's not internally.
Yeah,
not
exactly. I mean, that's kind of why I bring it up as my biggest concern, because I'm not that concerned about it. I think this is a really good fit. I think I'm very high on this deal and this fit.
Yeah, I was, like I said, I was just blown away when I saw it on my Twitter feed. Jackie, if and when Ryan Johansson returns healthy, like I kind of led onto this a little earlier, but do you think that number, $4 million a year, kind of frees up some more cash for the Avalanche to do maybe even more in the open market come free agency?
Yes and no, because I feel like that was kind of their big spend, though. Okay. I mean, on one hand, the Avs didn't give up anything, and so if they wanted to make a big move, they still have what little assets they have left to do it with. But if you think about it, like they have about $15 million left. They need six forwards to sign Byram, another defenseman. One of those six forwards needs to be Newhook. Like, I'm not seeing where they're gonna get a big move. And
gotcha.
So I do wonder if everyone from this point on is going to be less than that $4 million. Gotcha. I feel like they kind of got their big piece. They got the piece they needed for sure, but I almost feel like this was the big move, and then everything else is going to kind of like fall in under this. Unless something crazy happens, they trade a Taze, they trade a whoever, something else. But even if they trade like a Newhook, that's not a lot of money out.
Mm-mm.
So they don't have a lot of money out, money in. Even if they make a big deal, there's not much to move out. And so
that's why I only see Taves as really the only trade, potential trade piece that the Avs have in their pocket that could really move the meter, just because you would effectively, depending on who you got in return, just be reallocating that cash to your top six from the defensive group that seems to be in pretty good hands. Now, I get a lot of people telling me, hey, we're trying to win a Stanley Cup here. Stop trying to trade Devon Taves. I totally agree. I just think that there was an imbalance in our team that came to light last season, which was that we still had probably one of the top three elite defensive groups in the league, but that forward group basically from seven down was just a mess throughout the season and then again in the playoffs. So that's
I say to that, like, do you see next year as the best shot or not?
That's my question.
I guess everyone can
have
different answers to that. I personally don't, because they're not going to have Landy, and they might never have Landy, but we know for sure they're not going to have him. You know, fingers crossed for the playoffs, which would be fantastic. But is next year really like the last hurrah? Is that the year that you want to blow the wad? Do you want to move forward after that with even fewer assets? And everyone says, oh, the cap's going to go up. Like, that's just going to solve everything.
$5 million. So.
Yeah,
which
I
just
think
means every guy's gonna new hook's gonna be asking for three or four.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Every single person that hasn't signed is gonna ask for more, and then just move that out every single time if the cap jumps year after year after year. It's like oh, the cap's gonna go up. We're gonna re-sign Taze. Like his agent and him haven't heard about this cap going up.
To me, that's
just like crazy. Like, the percentage that they would sign for now is the percentage they're going to sign for in the future. So is next year the big old last hurrah? In my opinion, it's not. I think they probably need a couple years to really build that depth back up. You hope to God that they can re-sign Mikko. They got four more years of Kale. I think they have a really good core and a foundation, but if you see next year as like, because then you're done. If you're all in, you're done. Mm-hmm. Then you truly have taken a step back, and you probably won't win again with this core and in this window. Or are you going to try to get better at maybe you can win a couple more in a couple years?
Right.
That's the way I look at it.
If you see, I think the you always have to look at the writing on the wall with how the Avs are making acquisitions and when they're doing it. You see them do this move now, and they always do this, I feel like, because they know as soon as that market opens, it's all hell's going
to
break loose.
Yeah, they want to get ahead of the market.
Yeah,
and they don't want to be desperate. We don't want to have to do a Kemper trade just to get a center.
Well, you don't want to have to pay a premium for your 2C. And if you look at the Kadri situation, they didn't pay him a premium either. They had him at $4 million and change. So if you look at the Ryan Johansson contract, it looks very eerily similar to that situation. But Evan, do you see Ryan Johansson as the 2C if he's healthy? Is that the fix, or is there another person out there?
I can see it if he's healthy and if he does live up to expectations and goes kind of a little bit above it, I would say.
Okay.
That's a really good point about Kadri, you know, kind of being the same way before he came to Colorado. That's an excellent point that I completely had forgotten about. So the hope maybe is that Bednar will, you know, do whatever he did to Kadri to make sure that Johansson also has a career year at 31 years old, or 31, 32.
He'll be 31 in a couple months.
Yeah, 31 years old. So, you know, that's the hope, right? However, you know, if it doesn't work out, then, you know, I think he would be a solid 3C, of course. It does make me question kind of what Compher would want to do. If he would be up at 2C at, you know, another, like maybe around $4 million to $5 million, but I would think that he would want more than that. And, you know, there's still Lars Eller that you have to think about re-signing him, because you gave up a second round pick for him. You would think, you know, as Jackie has said time and time before, that you'd want to re-sign him if you're giving up a second round pick.
He fits that 3C role too,
and that too doesn't
come back.
Mm-hmm. And that too. So then, you know, like quickly thinking about it, and like, you know, I've been trying to think about it, is that, you know, Johansson then would be on that second line center, and then, you know, Eller would be third line center, right?
Mm-hmm.
Newhook probably on the wing on the third line, I would think. So then you need someone on the left and on the second line, so on and so forth. So there's a whole lot of moving pieces and jumbling around that you can do. I think he'll be successful. That's the hope anyway. If he battles through injury though, again, as he did last season, especially, then, you know, then there's going to be, you know, some question marks and holes to fill, that will be a lot easier said than done. And then we could end up in, you know, kind of the same turmoil that we did last year, where Oscar Olausson makes his second NHL appearance because he has to. So we'll see.
Well, okay, more than three games would be progress, though.
Yeah, exactly.
If anyone came up and like actually stayed, I mean, we had like Cal Burke, who had like no business playing in the NHL.
I forgot that he played.
Making his debut. Like, somebody with talent having to play is a good thing, but they need to play more than like three games. Yeah.
Just real quick, too, Jackie, what did you think of the trade featuring Oscar Olausson from Oshawa? From Barry to Oshawa, pretty lopsided in terms of one player for four picks and another player. What are your initial thoughts on that?
You mean like when he was still in junior?
Yeah, am I looking at the wrong headline here?
Probably. That was like 2 years ago.
Yeah, that already happened a long time ago.
Oh, yeah, that was in 2022. Didn't he just get traded a couple days ago or something?
No, because he's NHL
ladies and gentlemen,
age.
Welcome to this episode of Adrian putting his foot in his mouth. Congratulations, you unlocked a rare version of an episode. Oh my goodness. So, what do you think of that Oscar Olausson trade that happened 7 years ago? Avs drafted Tyson Jost. What'd you guys think of that?
It's okay. Hey, I'm open to talk about anything prospect related.
And we're back, baby. We are back.
Oh, welcome to the off season, folks. Welcome
and
to the
with that, let's
start. Are you thinking of Olofsson? Because I wanted to mention. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
The
Olofsson
trade? There's that trade too. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Olausson,
I can answer
Olofsson.
That question.
Hang on. Yeah.
The one from Dallas.
Correct. That guy.
I don't even remember what the return. It was nothing. It was future consideration.
It was future consideration.
So yeah, another thing where Avs get things and they don't have to give anything. That's wonderful. I think he's kind of like an Anton Bleed, like a tweener. Like, I'm sure they want him to get some NHL games, but ideally they don't have him penciled in, and they also shouldn't have Ben Myers penciled in either, for the record. If he comes in and, like, there'll be injuries, he'll get called up. We'll see what he can do. You know, he was pretty productive in Sweden, not so much in the Dallas system. So we'll see, was it the system? Because usually guys that are productive in the men's league in Sweden can translate that. So there could be a little bit more upside that we haven't seen. So I think it's fine. Like, they just kind of got, again, like ahead of the market on a guy that Dallas is willing to just move. So,
well, if he plays anything like the potential Olausson has as a first round pick.
Not quite. He's a lot older though. He's like 27.
He is. I could see him though, like slotting in on that fourth line perhaps. You know, with the rumor that Darren Helm's going to retire, which has kind of actually gone under the radar, I feel like. You know, mind you, it was from a source who's no longer credentialed, but was credentialed for a long time. So take it with a grain of salt. I won't name names, but you could kind of guess. you know, I think that's also kind of gone under the radar. And then, you know, if you bring back Cogliano, he could go on the third line, Olofsson on the fourth line. Like I said, there's a lot of things that you can work with, move around with. Hell, bring back Alex Galchenyuk, because the Preds aren't going to sign him. So
that's just hilarious.
That would be hilarious if Galchenyuk somehow ends up with the Eagles or with the Avs.
Basically, you bought Johansson
for free. And got $4 million off of him.
Galchenyuk's inclusion was really just the same as future considerations, because
it really
just
was.
Had to have a contract
to go one
in order to put one on the books.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys. Well, it's time, since I've officially made a fool of myself, that I hand the reins over to a machine that spins names for me. We're going to do the Wheel of Free Agents. What you got for me, Ezra?
Well, I wanted to, before we got into free agents, I wanted to talk about something real quick, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
On the list, I just decided I was going to bring it up. I hope.
Bring it in.
I've seen a lot of people talking about Yegor Sharangovich from New Jersey, and I was just curious what we all thought about his potential fit as a, you know, middle six winger here. I was doing a cap friendly roster. At the end of the show, I want to show it to y'all and have y'all roast me. But I don't think you'll roast me. I think it's a good roster. But he's on it, and I'm curious what y'all think of that.
I want to know what you paid for him.
Yeah.
What you gave up?
I traded back from the first. I traded our first round pick to New Jersey for Sharangovich, a second round pick, and a fourth round pick.
Okay, I like that.
And then I signed him to a 2-year, $2.8 million contract.
Okay. I like those two ideas. Then I'd be on board. I think that'd be very Avs-ish type find and a good use of the assets, so I like it.
So I'm kind of out of the loop with this guy a little bit, so I don't really have much to say. Sure. I will say I get a little concerned anytime a guy just kind of blows up, you know what I mean? And then you bring him in. So at that price point,
I'd be a little concerned that I think he's probably going to want in the threes. Probably. Like if he signs for that cheap, why wouldn't New Jersey keep him? Now I know they have a lot of guys to sign too, but that seems a little low for, what did he score? 40 points? Not last year, but the year before. Was it
46 points.
Yeah, and how many goals?
76 games with 24 goals.
Okay, so like 24 goals is going to get the guy paid. So
that's fair.
You know, is he going to be more like 3.5-ish? You know, I still like the idea, though. I'm still on board with if New Jersey's willing to do it for that kind of – like I like the idea of another one that I've heard is trade the first for 2 seconds and then trade one of the seconds for DeBrusk. Mm. I like that idea too.
Mm. I really like that idea. I like that one.
But you know, Boston already got rid of their. You know, they need to get rid of more. But I think that would be fair because I think the talent pool where they're at 27 is going to be very similar if they move back in the second round. And so, if they did something like that where they still made a pick, but then they were able to use that and get a decent player, I think that would be a fantastic use of assets.
And where do you put him, Ezra, if they were to acquire him? Since he's a center, where does he land for you in the lineup?
Well, he's a center, but he's also a winger. He can play anywhere. So for me, I think he's kind of like Ryan Johansson insurance in a way, where he could step into that second line center role if necessary. But really, I have him slotted as a second line left wing.
I think he'd be like an E-Rod replacement. Like he'd probably play on the second line wing. He'd also play third line center. It's probably that type of player.
Exactly. Yep.
Well, I love his age too, because if you can get him in, sign him up, see how he develops. I mean, in 3 years he'll be 28. If he becomes a 30 goal scorer, 35 goal scorer, then we're really talking, right? So that's interesting. That's one of the guys I see people bring up that I'm like, I don't want to look too much into him because I don't want to fall in love with him and then be disappointed when he's never a Colorado Avalanche, because that happens to me sometimes. But speaking of falling in love with people that will probably never wear burgundy and blue, let's spin the wheel of free agents.
Yes.
I'll have you know that I took the – I think we did three? We did –
we did three. Ryan, we did like the three. We did the three biggest ones that, like, as ones had been linked to.
It was like Duran, O'Reilly. I forget who the other one was, but yeah, they were.
Yeah,
I think the other one, Meyer,
Timo Meyer. Yeah.
Oh, right. Well, Timo's still not signed, so I guess dream's still alive. None of them are signed. So
in before the wheel cheese is Meyer again.
Here we go. I asked because I took him off.
Oh, okay. Never mind then. I take it back. The anticipation.
Spinning.
Ooh, okay.
For Brat.
Oh, Esker here's Brat. A sign. Yeah, you're going to have to respin that
one. Oh, take him off. Look, the thing even knew. It didn't even show the name. It was like, oh, we're good on that. All right.
Take spin two. It again. Take two.
Spin the wheel, ladies and gentlemen. What a little land on.
That's a good game voice. I like
right?
it.
Right? Hang on. Evgeny Dadonov.
That's an interesting one. I feel like he's going to end up back in Dallas, but if he doesn't, I definitely see him as a quality middle six winger. I just don't think you can – we can – I don't know. I question how much we can afford because he's probably going to be able to get four-ish on the open market. And if he, but he was, if he was closer to three, I'd be into it.
I think at least he'll sign for less term, which is nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, is he a, I think he's a guy that still thinks of himself as like a $4 million+ a year guy. So, I mean, he would be short term help. Like, is he really the Bednar type? It does seem like he wears out his welcome pretty quick. Yeah. But he does have ability, which is something the Avs need. So, I'm like medium on the idea. It'd be okay.
He also has, if you think about it, back to his Montreal days, he does have that Arturi Lehkonen connection.
True.
Is something that, you know, he could work with. You know, I can't remember. I think Dodonov is left side, right? He's left wing.
Yeah, left.
Yeah, okay. So I guess you could put Lehkonen on the right on like maybe put him like top, like both on the top line with McKinnon, but I don't really see Dodonov as a top line player.
No.
And yeah, so you know, it'd be good. I would like him. I wouldn't lie. And you know, taking away from a division rival, but you know, that one's a lot harder. I feel like to get done than it would be otherwise. And like I said, like everyone else has said, the cost.
When he's the guy that got traded by Vegas, but they didn't. Something got screwed up between the two teams, and then
he ended up still
a Vegas Golden Knight the next day. Awkwardly played for them.
Yeah, I think because Anaheim was on his no trade list, and then he wouldn't waive it. Gotcha. Kind of like the Torrey Krug situation.
Yeah. Well, my question alongside this wheel of free agents is in regards to the money that Landeskog's contract frees up. I think ideally you're hoping that Landeskog comes back next season, the season after this coming one, and that $7 million hits the cap again. So I guess my question is, you know, and Dodonov kind of fits into this. Is it one of those things where you're going to use a good portion of that on one guy? Or do you think that it's more of a rental one guy? Because it's got to be almost a year if you want to fit them back. Or is it multiple individuals to you folks?
I think it's multiple. And I think we've seen one of them already in Johansson.
Yeah, I think they already kind of spent it.
and I think Johansson kind of – one of the reasons he is a perfect fit is because – if Landeskog comes back, Johansson's on a one-year deal.
Exactly.
And they can offload that just as easily as they brought it on. They could probably trade it for more assets than they gave up. Because they gave up nothing. So, you know, I think assuming Landeskog does come back, I'm guessing somebody's on the outs. Whoever they brought in this offseason is probably on their way out.
Right. Like they probably want at least one one-year deal like that where they know for sure they can wipe it off. Or, I mean, someone else could be injured. You know, it's just kind of like, you know, Manson's not the healthiest and there's $4.5 million, you know. Like people say you could always move money. I mean, you could move money when you have assets. A lot easier when you can attach sweeteners to it. It's also easy, like we saw with Taylor Hall and with Johansson. If they're still able to play, there's interest. Now when you get, like, let's say Eric Johnson, he could still play. But at that point, you're not even going to gift him off for free. So, you know, you can always move something. So I guess you can't, I mean, you have to plan for tomorrow, but you can't really save money for tomorrow, at least in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's always different options. So I wouldn't as much worry about, like, oh, if Landy comes back, what are we going to do? Like, they obviously have to plan for Mikko and whatever they decide with Byram and 4 years down the line, Makar. Like, those things you absolutely have to plan for. But as far as, like, constructing a team, I think you just have to do what you have to do to get through this year.
That's fair.
I look at it.
That's probably a fair assessment given the circumstances. Plus, contracts will leave the docket to next season. And that'll free up some of that money as well. But just $7 million is just a big tag that you're going to have to find a way to bring back into the fold, hopefully. But let's spin this thing again. Here we go. I got to do this for the radio audience, you know, because they can't see it. They can't see the wheel.
It's a cool. If you can't see it, it's pretty neat. I like it.
Yeah. John.
Oh boy.
What do you know? What do you know?
I'd be interested in him at a small price point. I think there's a lot he can bring to a fourth pair, but or third pair, fourth pair, really. I'd love him not to play. But no, third pair. there's a lot he can bring to a third pair, but it just, he is not sound defensively. So if he's not next to Jack Johnson, or who I think should be on the team, or as a third pair defender, then he's not going to be. I don't know. If they try to get a speedy puck mover on the left, they should not be getting Don Klingberg on the right. But it all depends on where things shake out in the top five group. If somebody's out, then Klingberg could come in. But if everybody sticks around, he doesn't seem like the right guy to bring in, to me.
Imagine hearing five years ago that you would rather want Jack Johnson on your team than John Klingberg. I don't know. That's just hilarious to me.
Yeah. I'm not sure that's exactly what I mean, but I just think the fit is better.
No, yeah.
No, I get what you mean, though. Yeah, I get what you mean. I mean, I pretty much copy-paste what you said. I think he would at most be a sixth defender, and that would be it. Nothing more than that.
I think kind of similar to Dadonov, like, he probably still kind of sees himself as a, I mean, he signed last year for $7 million. It was 1 year, but like, is he a guy that's now going to be okay taking like $1
million?
I doubt it. Yeah. So are you going to give him, let's say, even like $4 or $5 million? And he already took the short term and it didn't work out for him. So is he really up for that again?
Probably not.
I don't think so.
I don't think he's going to be in the aisle the Avs are shopping in. I don't see a fit that way.
That's a great way to put it. Not in the aisle. Those
guys can just get more money elsewhere.
Yeah.
That was the quickest wheel of free agent.
Yeah, we moved on from him quick.
Okay, here we go. This is
like the Timo Meier.
Because I knew the cat was coming, baby.
I like it. I'll start. I'll say I like him a lot. He's a really good player, but it's going to be very similar to the Timo answer. First, like, what can you even trade for him? And second, like, he wants a lot of money. He's probably going to want, like, this is probably one of the reasons why Nashville dumped Johansson, because they need the money to make that kind of deal. And, I mean, it'd be cool. I hope it would work out. Like, but you'd be talking about moving some major assets here.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
so I don't know.
Ottawa has already come out and said that they're not going to re-sign him. They want to move on from him. So, you know, if you can find a way to work with Ottawa, he's an RFA, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's not to fully correct you, but he said he's not coming back to Ottawa. Ottawa would
love better way. Sorry. Yeah. Yes. He's said he's moving. Yes. So if you can find a way to work with Ottawa, to, you know, do a similar thing, you know, eat some of his contract, you know, for the remaining, I think, 1 year that's on his deal.
Yeah.
You know, that would be, I would take that. That would be a good, you know, kind of one year prove it, I guess you could say again.
I don't think he's signed, but is the thing. He has one RFA year. I think he's going to be similar to Dubois.
Oh, right. You're right.
Where
they're not signed,
but they have one RFA year. So, like, technically you could trade for them and they'd be the 1 year rental, but like, that's clearly not the idea. And so it'd be like a sign in trade, mm-hmm. or very much an already kind of agreed kind of thing once they get traded. So, like, let's just assume if the Avs acquired him, he's signing long term. Like,
yeah,
they're not going to do the deal and do the RFA hope game, which is kind of what Ottawa did last year. Like, they knew they could get 1 year out of him to play and then they'd have the one RFA year, but obviously that didn't work out for them, so that's not going to happen again. So I think it for the Avs, I think at minimum, because you have to think about, he'd probably be signed or at least have already agreed. You're probably talking Newhook, Taze, maybe something else, maybe next year's first. Would you do it, which is probably their three biggest assets they have right now that probably are even remotely tradable, are
right.
Newhook, Taze, and next year's first. Would you, knowing that he would sign, would you trade that for DeBrincat?
No, I think there'd be better options than DeBrincat at that point that you could probably get with those three.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
but I'll turn it back on you a little bit. Would you do just Taves for DeBrincat? Because for me, that's a real question mark. Yeah. I don't know what I would do there.
If you did Taves in a first,
he's going to sign.
Yeah, Taves in a first and he's signing, I think you count me in, because I feel like,
what's he signing for? Right, he's signing for 8.5. Would you rather
probably in that range? Yeah, probably in that range.
Or DeBrincat at 8.5.
Then I guess is that the question, is he worth it or is he more worth the assets? Like,
is Taze really going to get 8.5 though? Like,
I do. Just,
I think
somebody will pay him.
No, I think he's going to get more is what I mean. Like,
Right.
I think he's a 9.5.
I don't think he's quite nine. I was thinking 7, and then after hearing the cap now, I heard Bettman actually say 4 million. I think that's going to move him into 8.
Well, I think the thing that he's going to have in his corner, I guess, is what some of these other defenders in the league have signed for that are lesser defenders than he is. And I think that's where we'll see his camp really like hunker down to that, which is like, sure, you might not want to pay me $10 million, but I can probably go get that from, I don't know, Arizona or yada, yada, yada. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I mean, it wouldn't shock me if he got 9. Because you never know. If he's really the best D that's on the market, teams will go crazy. Especially, we have $4 million extra to spend. Like, it's just, they're just going to burn it. Immediately. And because
next offseason, he's going to be a 2-time Stanley Cup champ winner. You know,
if the Avs win the Cup next year with whatever with the roster they're going to have, then
it's fine.
Then that'll be like the pinnacle of glory.
Yeah. Well, that's what everyone tells me. It's like, you know, like I said, you know, everyone says we're trying to win a cup here. Don't trade Taze. But what happens if you don't? And then he walks. And I know you don't want to plan for not winning because the whole point is to do everything plan to win. But you have to look out for yourself in the long term, especially when you have someone like Cale Makar and a core like the Avs have that has the potential to really stay intact, unlike a lot of these other places. So I feel like it's important to make sure you keep balance within the lineup so that the guys that are truly a part of the core, which I think Devon Taze is subtly a part of the core, but I think
the organization loves him. I really do. Yeah. But they really don't love paying contracts like that.
Yeah. Plus he's going to want probably a pretty hefty signing bonus. So like he's going to want cash. And I think like, not that the Avs are cash poor, but I think they're already spending based on the guys that they've signed cash wise. And I feel like for an owner, you're also going to get heat from the owner that's going to say, you know, you guys did it without paying two defenders this much. You guys are going to have to do that again. So, I don't know. Just
well, here's the thing. Like, he's going to have to sign this summer. Like, MacKinnon signed in September, a year out. Yeah. Like, he pretty much has to sign this summer, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if it's possible and they're going to give him a ton of money. And it's also better for them. If the Avs are willing to give him a ton of money, it's better to do it now than after the cap actually moves. So if it's going to happen, and we're all skeptical, but like it literally has to happen this summer. If it doesn't, then he's not staying.
Man, if only it were like back in the day when we could just go reinvest into Cosmat and Pierre Lacroix would just,
get more money.
Go spend on whoever the heck the Avs wanted to. And speaking of Pierre Lacroix, congratulations to he and his family on his induction into the Hockey Hall of Fame. That's pretty, pretty cool. That's just, wouldn't it be wonderful if the Avs could operate without a salary cap, but then again, so would everybody else. And who knows what kind of madness that would create.
Lord,
it'd be like basketball or baseball, but hey, the Yankees don't win every year.
Korea and Team Mussolini on your third line, but maybe.
While we're giving shout outs, also shout out to Pierre Turgeon. You know, was only with the Avs for 2 years, but he also Hall of Fame induction.
Yeah.
Another Avs Hall of Famer.
Another one.
So yeah, it's also pretty cool.
I don't think Ezra considers that another one.
Well, no, that's why I put it in quotations.
good for him. I'm happy for him. It's just I'm surprised he's in the Hall. That's all.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'll agree with you on that one. There's some guys too that aren't in, and he is, and I'm like, interesting.
I'll say this. I listen to a lot of hockey podcasts, and whenever they start to talking about who should be in the Hall of Fame and who shouldn't, I skip ahead until I don't care at all. So I don't
avoid that topic on the script next time, huh?
No, I don't mean that. I just mean like,
but you mean the speculation or the debate. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the subjectivity of it all. A lot of great guys, and whoever they want to put in, great. A lot of great women, and they should put more in, but that's not what we're here to talk about either. So I don't know. the Hall of Fame talk is annoying.
Yeah.
No, well, let's get away from that then, because I know, Jackie, you wanted to touch quickly on Greg Cronin and the Ducks. Let's talk about that. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, good for him, obviously. Like, he's coached for a long time, but he's never been an NHL head coach.
He deserves it.
Definitely. I find it interesting the Ducks went for another promotion from the AHL, because that's what they were doing with Dallas Eakins, and it didn't work out. I liked Cronin. I liked that he was honest. He was very interesting to listen to in interviews. If you could find them, it's very hard, but I won't get into the links that one would have to do to listen to those interviews, but he was so honest. He's very detailed. You could see how he's such a good teacher, because he explains everything, but he makes it in a way you get it. He's long-winded, but at the end of the day, you get it, which is also similar to how Bednar is, I feel. Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting to see where the Avs go from there, because they haven't had – well, they still haven't had great luck in actually getting the players to graduate and play for the Avs. I think Cronin's helped a lot of guys that have moved on, which is fantastic for the players, fantastic for his reputation, but it hasn't really been fantastic for the Avs. So I guess the rumor is that they're going to go with Schneekloth, who was the assistant coach. He was the head coach when the Eagles were the ECHL and they won the two championships, which makes sense. Like, I think he's earned and deserves the chance to be the guy in the AHL, but and they've been fairly successful, like low-end playoff teams, like round one exit teams, you know, which is fine. If in a development league, you don't need to win the cup all the time. But I'd really like to see better there, especially better development. But that's not just on the coach. That's on the system and the organization moving guys forward. So, like I said, we'll see. You know, people saying, oh, it's like a huge loss for the Avs. I mean, it really isn't. But we are definitely seeing a good man move on, and so we should appreciate him for that.
Yes, and that is Greg Cronin, former head coach of the Colorado Eagles, current head coach of the Anaheim Ducks as of this summer, I guess, or whatever.
Yeah, he's already there. He's already at the helm.
So he started with the Eagles in 2018 and was there until now. So there's definitely an ode to him. Did he coach Rantanen in that case? Because when was Rantanen? No, so... I mean, I'm with you. I'm not trying to dog on the guy, but those who say it's like a huge loss, I agree with you. It's a head coach in a developmental league. I think the replacement will be pretty quickly found, and we'll go ahead, Evan.
Sorry, I was gonna say it's just more so it's like Jackie kind of touched on. It's more of a sign of the system, right? Like,
yeah,
not developing prospects all that well. You know, obviously losing them to other teams and finding success elsewhere. You know, that's. Yeah, you know, you'd wish that would happen with the top club, of course,
right?
And that, you know, that wasn't the case. So Cronin did his part. He did exactly what he was supposed to do. It just didn't turn out as well as it needed to go for the Avs as a whole, I guess you could say. But you know, that's a whole nother discussion that could get Jackie going, and we could be here for another 2 hours. So
Well, we'll move on for today, and I think that the four of us and Jacob should probably start getting together more frequently again now that the free agent window is going to open up July 1st. We should have some things to talk about.
I was going
to
say, maybe we'll do something on Saturday. I figure we talk about it off camera.
But that would be fun. I'm down with that. Do a little free agent.
I do want to mention real quick that our mock draft comes out tomorrow.
That's right. Check out our mock draft. Lots of contributions. We'll get to see if there's anyone as dumb as me that thinks that they should talk about a guy who got drafted 3 years ago now. But
Olsson, it's all the same. It's fine.
Imagine if both of them end up on the same line with the Avs sometime this upcoming year. That would be hilarious.
That actually could happen.
It could.
Yeah, that would be great. Well, Avalanche fans, thank you for listening today or for watching, depending on how it is you're consuming this entertainment. My name is Adrian Hernandez. I'm here with Ezra Parter, Evan Liu, and Jackie Kay talking Colorado Avalanche hockey via milehighhockey.com and the Mile High Hockey Lab.
Welcome to
Mile High Hockey Lab.
Mile High Hockey Lab.